Masters come from time to time to guide the child humanity back to God. Ever since we were separated from God, so far we have not gone back. So masters come, they are sent by God to carry the children back home. Guru Nanak, they come as maids, you see, at the age of 4 or 5 years when you are sent to the school for learning. The teacher began to teach him, say one, and go on further. And he abruptly told him, well, what do you mean by one? He said, well, you go on, you are being taught, you see. Then he said that one means one God. They are conscious in the childhood, you see. He is one, this whole creation came out from him. He is eternal. He is permeating all. He is the maker of all creation. And he is the most powerful power which controls all creation. He has no equal, therefore no fear, no enmity in anybody, because it is all his own expression. But he has got an existence. He came out of his own self. And if you want to meet him, we should meet somebody in whom he is manifested, who is Word made flesh. It is a gift of such a person to give you God as a gift. So Master gives such a gift which nobody else can give it. So the teacher asked me, what is it we should do? He says, all just burn away, grind all your outer attachments, grind it into ink. And in your conscious self, unattached by all worldly attachments, just say his prayers, his presence. Then he said, he is one, of course, also God is one. But he says, one is not one, the symbol one denotes some other power behind which is expressed as one. Kabir says, if he says he is one, then the question two will arise. So he is neither one nor two, but he is something of his own, in his own self, which cannot be expressed in words. He was absolute, he is absolute. So, the God and man are God made flesh, can give you contact by resuming yourself into him. This is his work. So why there forever to question arises, why he was the God in one? Guru Arjan says, because we are finite, we can only express him in finite terms. He is infinite. There are no other words. So he is a king. If he tells, well, Mr. such and such, do you think it is his place? We know fully well that he cannot be expressed in words. With all that, we have reverence, and we express him in the finite terms. The actual God, we did not come into expression, nobody has seen so far in life. That is only a question of God's vision himself. When he wanted, I am one and wish to be many, that power which came into expression, that is called word and naam, or shabda, which is the maker of all creation. So wordless and nameless, when it came into expression, that is called word, and naam, a shabda, or kalma, which is the cause of creation of all the universe. So as he wanted, and one and wished to be many, there is vibration. Vibration results in two things, light and sound. God is light, God is music of the spheres, He is nada. So all masters express that God is light. The world is a lamp unto my feet and light on the way. And Guru Nanak also says the same thing, all of the same. Mountain saints tell he is all light. Khuda Noor. Kabir says, from one light all this creation came to being. Guru Nanak says, if you come in contact with that power, we see light compared to billions and trillions of suns rising together. So this is the awakening that the masters have at the very outset, in the beginning. They are not, they come and made. What for? Just the children of God bring them home, you see. So primal manifestation of God is called word and naam, which is the call of all creation. The Bible says in the beginning was the word, word was with God, and word was God. And all things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. So this God into expression power, when manifested, there was vibration which resulted in two things, light and sound. So two aspects of God into expression power are light and sound. So saints and sages have given myriads of names to express this God into expression power. Some say He is Swami. Swami means Lord. Some say they are Anam. Anam means nameless. Some say it is a gum and a luck, incomprehensible and ineffable. Some say the Satpurush, the eternal reality. And there are many qualitative names, hundreds and thousands are there, to have sweet memories of God. Guru Tegh Bahadur, the ninth Guru of the Sikhs, well, ask people, well, what is that naam or word, the repetition of which whereof enables a person to cross over the world of sorrow. Again he says, what is the nama, the repetition of whereof enables a person to death, which lead to nirvana. So a contact with naam makes one luminous, self-luminous, with luminosity varying with millions of suns. And masters pray always, by thy grace manifest the divine light of naam, O Master. So it is in the hands of the Master to manifest that naam power within you. It is not the subject of the eyes, outward eyes. It is something wonderful, which can only be experienced not with the outer eyes of flesh and bones, but from inner eyes open to see the light of God. So there are myriads of names in the world but none of them ground salvation. Take the example that you see water is there. Water is a liquid one. But there are so many names given to that liquid in all languages. That's called water, aqua, ab, pani, jal, so many names are there. These are the names given to that liquid by drinking which our thirst is satisfied. By repeating the name of water or aqua, you that cannot satisfy your thirst. These words lead to the name. You follow me now? Similarly, God in the expression power, the two expressions of which is light and sound, that is to be contacted not with the outer eyes of flesh and bones, but there is one eye within, which is called third eye, latent eye, dikshu, shivnetra, or the single eye. If thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. That, Master says, when you see that light, this is true worship of God. With the God into expression is met, that will lead you where from that, from where it emanated. You see? So masters who are word made flesh, they give you contact by opening your single eye within you with the light and sound principles where the outer aspects of God into expression power. If you follow a sound, where will it lead you? To the place from where it has emanated, to the wordless God, wordless state. So for that reason, you see, they say God is permeating all creation. The word Ram is used in the East. Ram means who is permeating all creation. This is the word to donate that power which is permeating all creation. Unless you see, you are saying he is permeating, that means something. And if you are not seeing that he is permeating everywhere, just like one man who is called in the terminology of the saints, blind. So Master always says, see and then say. That light of God is in each one of us. We are all children of light, enveloped by mind and matter and outer covers of physical, astral and causal, etc. Unless we shake off these covers from outside, we draw our attention from all outside, and we rise in our own self, know ourselves, only then you can see God. And Master gave a demonstration of that, how to withdraw your attention from all outside, how can you know yourself that you are the enlivening power of the man body, and open the inner of the single eye with which light can be seen. So truly speaking, so many names given to God, qualitative and others, they mean to denote something, but they do not give you a contact with that. So masters come, they say, he is permeating all creation or makes you hear. They say, God is light, he opens your inner eye or the single eye and makes you see. This is all masters do. Christ said, I have come to make people see who do not see. And those who see, they may be blind. The outer expression of the soul is what? Attention. So, our attention all outside, we see the light. When it will be drawn from there, it will be darkness. Inside, when you close your eyes, you see darkness, you then take your whole attention into one within you, there will be light. So before we go to such masters in the worlds of the saints, we are blind in the terminology of the saints. So devotion to Nam is the only true worship. Saying only God is light, God is vibrating in all creation, He is God, what you say, ringing radiance, this won't do. Unless you hear the ringing and the radiance, that is the true worship. By having outer symbols to light a candle or ring the bell, this is a copy of that, you see. But that is not real worship. As it is done for the, in the name of God, they are good actions. That will give you good results, but you are the doer. So as long as you are the doer, you will have to, as you sow, so shall you reap, whether good or bad. So true devotion to Nam or the world is the only true worship which we learn at the feet of a master. Others who have not seen it, they cannot give us that thing. So why? I just quoted to you, the world is a lamp unto my feet and a light on my path. Guru Amar Das tells us, everyone does worship. Which even if we do something. But on the sensual plane only, so gets no result. Seeing is something else. That only repeating the name God is light is something else. Okay? So for that reason, but absorption in the Nam purifies the mind and bears fruit in abundance. So Nam is what? Nam is the great controlling power of all the universe. All world came out of him. He is the controller. He is permeating all. And our inner eye is open to see the light of God. Whatever you do, it is a good action, of course, but cannot give you salvation. Salvation will only come when you come in contact with light. See with your eyes, not the social or the physical eyes, which are made of flesh and bones, but the inner eye, that is within each body. And how that is opened, Master withdraw, they give us a demonstration of that, how to withdraw our outgoing faculties from outside and come to the seat of the soul in the body, which is at the back of the eyes. There the single eye is open, you can see. You would say, you bear testament, there is light. So by the word of the Lord, where the heavens made, in all the host of them, and he spake, and it was done. Mahamudra says, kun fiyokun. So man shall not live by bread alone, but every word that proceeded from the mouth of God. You see? Bread alone, for physical body you can live on bread, but the soul can only live if you got the bread of life, or water of life, which is within you already. We cannot have a contact with it unless our attention is withdrawn from all outside and we know ourselves. God is above body consciousness. So Master, when they come, they say there is God, they bear testimony to it. And who is the maker of all creation and permeating all. And they say we have seen. This world did not come out of itself. Scientists in the beginning, they said it is a reaction of the matter. And now they are coming round to that. Huxley, the greatest of, scientist, ultimately, first he gave out it is only reaction of the matter, etc. Ultimately he gave out that world is controlled by a power which is conscious. So this world is made by one who is permitting all and also resides in our hearts too. The world is all his manifestation. Somebody asks the Master, where is God? He says, tell me where he is not, but it is all his manifestation. The whole universe is a manifestation of God. But we see only when our inner eye is open, not before. We can't see him. Why? Because he is the subtlest of the subtlest, Ati and Agam. If you see through a microscope, the air will appear to be full of insects. In the air now you find there is nothing. But if you see through a microscope that magnifies whatever is there 700 times more, so you see the atmosphere full of insects. So if our eye becomes to that level as the air is, then you'll see it as whatever in the air is so magnified comes to the level of our eye, you see. So the man body is a wonderful house we are living. It has got so many apertures of the eyes, nose, ears, mouth and two underneath, but we cannot run away out of it. Some power is controlling us in the body. So that power which controls all universe, that is the power that controls us in the body. When that is withdrawn, we have to leave the body. So in man body only we can know God. It is a golden opportunity afforded to us in which we can see God. Once we see him, he is all controller of all creation, he is the doer, we are not, so we lose ego and our coming and going is ended. Tulsi says, while God is with us in the man body, we see him not. How fit it is. We also live in the body. We live in the body. And also that controlling power which is called into expression power, that also lives in the body. We both live in the same body. But pitifully we do not talk to him. Why? Because the attention which is the outer expression of the soul is identified with the world outside, out of the body. When we give it down from there, you see, now I am looking at you in front of me. I do not see what is behind. If I turn up, then only you see. So similarly, we can see with our own self, which is soul, the outer expression of which is sound, I mean, is attention. When that will be drawn from all outside, we see within, we find him. So we are all children of light. Take heed that the light within you is not dark. So this is Guru Arjan says, and this is Tulsi also says, while God is with us in the body, we see him not. Five, on a lifeless life like this, O Tulsi, every man is dark blind. This is how the Master sees. Kabir also said the same thing. He says, the entire world is groping in darkness. He says, all around, those are sitting with their inner eye closed. If it were a question of one or two, that could have been set right. But wherever I see, all our inner eyes glow. You know what is meant by the word blind in the terminology of the sage. So blind is not one who has got no eyes on the forehead, but is one whose single eye is not open to see the light of God. Third eye, single eye, a shivnetra, a latent eye is not open. And the Swamiji also says the same thing. We are all blind, we do not know, go the way which is within us and leads to God. So, So the purpose is, the eyes of flesh see not, but the Master illumines the eye within. With that you can see Him. So a worthy disciple begins to witness the power and glory of God within himself when he sits by his Master. Quran says, man was sent to the world, and eyes and ears were just closed. They put seals on them. And Master comes from time to time to break those seals. That's all. Before going to a Master, our inner eyes not open, we are blind in the terminology of the saints. We are deaf also in the terminology of saints. When he gives us a demonstration of that, we begin to see that. We begin to hear the voice of God within us. So, at present, why can't we see? By enveloped in darkness, we ask, and we strive for God by deeds not less dark. Without a perfect Master, none has found the way, nor one can do. But when he comes across a perfect Master, he begins to see him with the inner eye, which is called the third eye, single eye, or whatever. And where? When that is open, within the closet of the heart. The body is verily the temple of God, and the Holy Ghost dwells in it. God resides in temples not made by the human hand, but He does reside in the temple which He has made in the womb of the mother. Samerson says, tap inside. That means withdraw your attention from all outside, tapping inside and going into the heart soul, Emerson says, in the brain, as once you remember, remarked by President Truman. For it was not with his heart, into his heart soul that he repaired whenever he wanted peace and relaxation from the high duty work of his high office. He wanted relaxation, he returned to the. This is called Brahmarudra in the Vedas. So this is a practical thing, you see. Vedas call it as Brahmarudra. Perception, intuition, and reasoning just help to understand the reality to a certain extent at the level of the intellect. But seeing is believing. Seeing with one's own eyes, the single eye of this inlet or ingress, little is known to the people at large. So this is experience or demonstration given by a Master to start with. Those who come to Him, He says, the light is within you, but the blind who are, they know not. They know not the door. You will find Christ saying, you see what the old prophets could not see. You hear what the old prophets could not hear. So blessed you are. We will have to revert to the third eye, the latent eye, or the single eye within us, to enable us to see the light of God. And this light, what is it? God said, let there be light, and there was light. And this is the true light that lighteth every man that cometh into the world. And the light is the life of man. So Master tells us, take heed that the light within you is not darkness. All scriptures describe rays of light vibrating with the music of light, emanating from the formless absolute existence, came to manifest the world in its variegated colors in countless shapes and forms. This is all the expression. This power pervades all the four grand regions of the universe.
Hello. And welcome to the satsang for Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was the first 30 minutes of the talk titled Naam Bhakti. Master gave the talk on 9th November 1972 in Vancouver, British Columbia. Our reader this evening is David Halliburton.
Hello, everyone. I'll be reading today from the May 1973 issue of Satsandesh, Master's talk called The Real Hunger. A great yearning is within me to meet the Beloved. How can I find the perfect Master so as to fulfill my desire? Guru Arjan Sahib tells us of this strong desire to meet the Lord, which lies deep within the soul. What are the means for realizing this desire? We must first decide if that yearning is really there or not. No doubt the tongue does declare it, and the mind agrees, but usually the heart really desires only the world and worldly things. Comb your heart thoroughly to find out exactly what it really wants, and you will see that, out of a whim, sheep-like, you follow others who say they are seeking the truth. But this is not truly wanting the Lord. If the heart truly desires, the prayer springs forth without effort, like an overflowing expression which cannot be controlled or stopped. And the heart cries out, O Lord, O Master, give me this thing. See for yourself, when we want something, how we cry for it, in the night, throughout our sleep, and in all our waking hours. Every moment is spent concentrating on the desire for that worldly wish. Automatically, and with each breath, the prayer springs forth from that heart which is deep within us, the soul. This is the condition of most of us. When the heart sincerely pleads for something, that prayer is accepted by the Lord. But the trouble is that usually the heart does not want what the tongue is asking for. We are not true to ourselves. We go on cheating ourselves. If only we were sincere with the tongue, heart, and mind all wanting the same thing, we would get our wish, without doubt. Our prayers reflect our desires, mostly all for worldly things, and our heart responds to this. We consider God to be some useful benefactor, and as long as He helps us achieve what we want, then we believe there is a God. But if we do not get our own way, then God becomes a doubtful factor. Majnu, the famous Persian lover for whom all the world and all religion existed only in his beloved Layla, was once told by someone, Majnu, God wishes to meet you. He replied, If God wants to meet me, He will have to come in the form of Layla. He could not even accept God without His beloved Layla. We also will not accept God unless He conforms to our desires. All our remembrances of Him are for the sake of the world. Surely, when someone like Majnu died, would he not get Layla instead of God? It is all a play of the heart. When the cry comes forth from a true heart, then God prepares the way for granting the wish. It has been very beautifully expressed in the Gurbani. The prayer which is true is heard by God, and He brings that child unto Himself so that he may listen to Him. When tongue, mind, and heart become one, that is true. All else is untrue, illusion, falseness. Secondly, one should wait. If a prayer comes from such a child, the Lord makes that child sit beside him and then says, "Ask, child, for whatever you want." Whether or not the heart can truly desire the Lord is a deep question. There was a true devotee named Namdev, and it is said that the balcony of his house collapsed with want of repair. So his relatives told him to get a carpenter to do the work. He went the next day to seek the carpenter, but being a true devotee, he started thinking only of the Lord, and in doing so forgot all else and sat down quietly in his remembrance. When he arose, it was late evening, and he returned home. His people naturally asked what had happened about the carpenter. Namdev said, "Oh, I forgot, but I will bring him tomorrow." Many days then passed in the same fashion, and finally the exasperated members of his family protested and threatened him, "If you do not get the carpenter today, you will get a very rough reception on your return." This is what is meant by devotees and the world can never meet. Anyway, Namdev promised that he would really bring the carpenter that day without fail. We must remember that lovers and devotees cannot be forced to accept a certain attitude to life, for they are intoxicated in the object of their heart's attachment. So once again Namdev lost himself in God's remembrance, and when he opened his eyes it was evening. He thought, "Well, now they will treat me very badly." But he started homeward, philosophically accepting all that the Lord sent with a grateful heart. However, God had seen his devotee's difficulties and had himself gone to Namdev's house in the disguise of the carpenter, and in one day had completed all the repairs. One can imagine what beautiful work had been accomplished by the Lord's own hand. When Namdev arrived at the house, he at once recognized the fine work and realized what had happened. There is a Persian saying, "Only the bulbul," a bird with a very happy song, "can understand the bulbul's language." The eye of a true devotee can easily recognize the handiwork of his master. Even before Namdev entered the house, neighbors called to him to ask where he had found such a competent carpenter and what his wages were, etc. Namdev laughed joyfully and replied that that particular carpenter's wages are paid in love. They did not fully understand this, but they asked how they could get hold of him. Namdev said, "Break away from detachment from the world and the family, and then my carpenter will come." When one has broken all attachments, he will come without asking. Of course, Namdev was one of the few true devotees of God. He did not ask God to help him, but God himself is concerned for those who are true to him. I can quote an instance from my own life during Hazur's lifetime. Fell dangerously ill. He was about 18 years old at the time. The doctors told me that his condition was dangerous and that I should take leave from my work for 3 days and remain with him, for he might die at any minute. I naturally did as they advised, but Sunday fell within those 3 days, and I was detailed by my master to hold the satsang in Amritsar every Sunday. The doctor had told me not to leave my son's bedside, but I thought, to whom does this child belong? The guru knows everything. I should do the work that he has given me. So I went to Amritsar and held the satsang there. After the satsang, I remembered that Amritsar was halfway to Beas, and my heart said, why not have the Master's darshan before returning home? So I caught a train to Beas and reached there about 1:30 p.m. It was a very hot summer season, and Hazur was upstairs. But when he heard I had come, he called me to his room. He was lying on his bed resting, but when I entered the room, he sat up and asked me, what is the condition of the boy? The masters know everything. I replied, Hazur, he is seriously ill. But as I understood your orders were to go to the satsang, I considered that more important. Hazur became very quiet and looked quite sorrowful. And I said, Hazur, why are you in such a mood when the slightest thought of you can make one forget all sorrows? He said, well, you have taken the load off your head, and now I must bear the burden myself. On returning home, I found my son was all right, and his condition had not deteriorated as the doctors had thought. These are the ways of perfect masters. This is their greatness. So I may say that if you leave everything to him, placing yourself completely in his hands, he will do all your work. He will come to the heart that truly yearns for him. Even if the heart is even slightly turned to him, he will look after you. But for the heart that truly yearns in all fullness, what can stop his coming? In the Gurbani it states that the merciful Lord has given orders for whatever the child requests to be granted. The true child desires only this happiness, that his heart may reside in thy lotus feet. Also in the Quran it is written, I will give whatever he wants. All masters have said the same thing in different languages. If the desire in the heart is really strong, then most definitely we can realize the Lord. When there is the pain of true desire in our cries, when the heart is filled with worldly desires, physical comforts, and earthly relationships, then where would the Lord take up residence? The tongue speaks of God, and outwardly we bow down and worship all manner of images and conceptions of God. But our family and others live in our hearts. Man was intended to be a temple of God, true enough, but he has himself made the human form a temple filled with lifeless, perishable images. How can the Lord manifest in such a place? When the voice of true yearning springs forth in desperation, then what are the means of realizing God? He himself extends his mercy and leads the seeking soul to the living master, the master's soul who has already realized him. The tiny cries from an ant can reach him more quickly than the loud trumpeting of the elephant. We must simply have the true yearning in the heart. That is all. He hears. He is in each and every being. He is not far away, beyond the skies. He is the very soul of our soul. By his mercy, the Satguru is met, and this is the greatest good fortune that one can receive. we meet that Master Soul when the Lord Himself so desires. And as we do not know the Lord, so we cannot know the Master either. By the guidance of someone with eyes, can the blind man find that which he seeks? He whose inner eye is not open is at the level of mind and senses. He cannot see the Lord working at the human pole. Such a person can have no conception of that higher power working there. And so for him, the human pole is merely a man. You will remember that during the life of Guru Nanak, he was called one who is misguided. By whom? By those whose eye was closed. We can meet the Lord only through a competent master. If the word competent is used, it means that there are those who are incompetent also. You should be aware that the world is full of such so-called masters. You can pick up a stone and find some guru, sadhu, or saint underneath. A truly competent guru, a realized soul, who has become one with the greater soul, is very rare. It is not a mere acting and posing, and cannot be denoted by merely changing the outer appearance, and by wearing garments of various shapes and hues. It is a question of competency. It is the mandate from God that without a Satguru, realization is not achieved. The Lord Himself has made the law that without a perfect master, He will never be realized. It is a fundamental law, nothing to do with delivering lectures, reading scriptures and other books, or thinking. Absolutely not. Realization is a matter of practical experience alone. Neither can he be realized through outer demonstrations, rites and rituals, building fine palaces and temples, or extensive expansion of religious organizations. To know a true master, there is but one criterion, through which none can be deceived. A true master will give something to start with, by which one is fully convinced of his competency. Do you understand this? It must be some small experience, at least, of the inner knowledge. And that is given when? When your heart turns in that direction. If one has only curiosity, or a motive to test only, and has no sincere desire, then no experience will be gained. During Hazur's lifetime, he was once told of a man who had discovered the secret words which the Master gives only at initiation on the inner path, and Hazur was asked what would happen in such a case. Hazur replied by giving an example of a dog who wanders through a cotton field, and asked if that dog, by merely passing through the field, comes out with a suit on. A person may by chance hear the whole of the Master's initiation, but how can he benefit if the Master has not accepted him, and he received none of the Master's attention? This whole spiritual science is of attention. A single loving and purposeful glance from the Master is enough to lift the living force within a person. We saw when sitting at Hazur's feet that many learned pundits came to him. Such persons do come to God-realized men, usually to argue on various points. we saw that they came and sat proudly, even arrogantly, proud of their great learning. So great was their pride that they could not listen to the Master's words. Hazur would often say, "Brothers, you also travel within as I do. So why not travel inside together, instead of arguing here outside?" One day, a certain well-known philosopher named Kartar Singh Nabina, who was blind, came to Hazur Satsang, and the attendants guided him to the front row of the Sangat. After the satsang, he remarked to Hazur, "Maharaj, I am one whose speeches have astonished the whole country, and before whom, when lecturing, none could stand and speak against. But today I have sat at your feet, and I feel like a small child at nursery school." The God-realized man's talk is so simple, clear, and accurate that it immediately affects the receptive heart. There is a great difference between the words of a realized soul and those which come from an empty vessel. Listen to the saint's true words, for he speaks of what he sees. The eye of the master is so developed that God is really apparent to him everywhere. Nanak's Lord is apparent. How then can the master look down on anyone? With one light, the whole world was created. Who is good and who is bad? Their great love is for all. And this is another criterion found in a realized person. They have no jealousy, no desire to fight or quarrel with anyone. They have love, even for those who have declared themselves enemies. When they asked Christ how they should treat each other, he requested them to repeat what Moses had told them to do. And they said that Moses had said to give an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Jesus then explained that those instructions conformed to the extreme hard-heartedness of the people living at that time. When the people asked Jesus for his advice on the subject, he quoted Moses' higher teaching, "Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself," and said further, "Love thine enemies." In Hazur's time, there were those working to damage the spiritual cause. They would even give public talks against him. And when they came to Bayas, they would have the effrontery to take their meals from the Dera's kitchen. Someone complained about this, but he said, "That's all right. Let them eat." No one was ever refused food. This is another simple example of a true master's love for all men. He has no hatred or vengeance, and wishes only the welfare of those who would do damage. In due course of time, the very people who had worked against Hazur began to respect him, a respect that has not failed up to now. Truth is truth, after all. It appears that the whole world is shopping around for one worldly thing or another. All is forgotten in the stomach's affairs. However, sometimes, somewhere, a person with true thoughts, a true lover of God, can be found. Nevertheless, such people are very rare. The holy places are filled with worshiping people who pray, read, and discuss the religious books, but if one looks into their hearts, one sees what they want. They are in remembrance of the Lord, but for the world's sake. But we would like to make God into a cat's paw. We have no real desire for Him in our hearts. Firstly, then, we should know that whatever desire lies in our hearts will be fulfilled. There is no doubt about this. I have quoted from various scriptures, and in a common sense fashion, placed the facts before you. If today we are not getting God realization, what is the reason? The reason is that we are not really desiring it. Desiring it with the heart, mind, and tongue. We have no truth on the tongue, and we do not receive the gift. If you stand in the doorway of your house and tell your friend to enter, but you do not stand aside that he may pass through, then how do you expect him to come in? Pray and wait. The Lord is not deaf. He knows the innermost part of our soul. He knows where our attention wanders to. He knows our each and every whim. Place your desire before Him and await His pleasure. He who is the true doer sees our desires. A child's father may know that the stubborn child wants a certain thing, but he will not grant it if that thing will not give the child any benefit and will bring only misery and loss. A desire has been fulfilled, only to leave behind a bitter taste, flavored with regret. So, what is the highest prayer? Ask Him for Himself, or ask Him for that which He knows is best for you. Just leave everything to Him, and you will succeed in all things. In this hymn, Guru Arjan describes how the yearning in his heart to meet the Lord has become a ruling passion in his life. O Lord, when will I meet a perfect master? When he reaches the height of the Most High, only then will he know the High One. How can material eyes see that which is fine, pure, and imperishable? Agam. Looking into the atmosphere, little is seen of what it contains, but that does not mean it contains nothing. Whatever is there is minute, and either the eyes must become deeply perceiving, or the atmospheric content must be enlarged to the grosser vision of the eye. The latter can easily be achieved with the aid of a microscope, and thereby within the range of the human eyesight, the tiny microbes present in the atmosphere can be seen. Similarly, those whose inner sight has developed can see the Lord. So we should find that kind of competent spiritual master who can develop our inner sight to that range of refinement which reveals the truth. Only then can our true work be done. Furthermore, I want to tell you that the status of gurus varies. I have already mentioned those who act and pose and wear different outer garbs. Leave these aside, for the world is full of them. We find also the gurus of the religions, those with outer knowledge, who teach morals and customs. This is good work, for man is a social being and needs social guidance. Human beings must live together in society, and for that, the existing social or religious orders are necessary. If it were not for these, new ones would have to be created. It is better for a man to remain associated with that order into which he was born, and in those very circumstances make his life pure, chaste, and righteous. Well, I've run out of time this evening. I've been reading from one of Master's talks called The Real Hunger, which was printed in the May 1973 issue of Sasandesh. Thank you, Master.
Thank you, David, for your loving reading. Tonight's satsang was attended by 54 people. Thank you all for listening, and thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
So our Master tells us like that. They say you and that God power is both within this man body. And where are you? You are just identified with your world outside. Why don't you withdraw your attention from outside? He is waiting for you within you.